guys, hello and welcome to the We Are The Girls in Clareton Blue She Believes podcast, episode 2. We are now into our second week already of a She Believes tournament, which has caused lots of debate so far. Tonight we're joined by Rich. So Rich, just give us our viewers a story of what you do in women's football.
I've been involved in women's football for quite a while now, whether it be as a writer or more recently working with Sheffield United. It's always predominantly been a writer. I got involved probably first nearly 10 years ago now, but sort of more full-time-ish towards 5-6 years ago. And sort of been involved pretty regularly ever since.
No, we would ask for what Ali does in women's football. However, we've only got an hour and a half tonight, so Ali's life is mostly women's football now.
Indeed.
So tonight's topics, we'll go through our USA defeat, which will probably go on about a lot of moaning from me and Ali about a certain man. A Japan victory, which will probably include further moaning. We'll preview the Spain match and... we'll kick off with tonight's question. Were England fans disrespectful towards Ellen White with criticism? Now, this comes after BBC 2 or 4 gave Phil Neville a mic. Rich, we'll start with you. What did you make of these claims from Phil Neville that there was quite a bit of backlash towards Ellen White after the USA defeat?
Yeah, I found it a little bit strange. I think Phil has obviously taken the fact that everybody wanted Beth England to start as kind of a... Everyone's now saying Ellen White is almost, you know, yesterday's man kind of thing, and nobody wanted her to play. I don't think that was the case. I think we all know that Ellen's an unbelievable player. She's an unbelievable striker. And obviously against Japan, she showed why she's still arguably England's, you know, maybe most consistent striker in terms of her experience. But I think people just wanted to see Beth start because she was in such great form. She was playing so well. And, you know, for me personally, I wanted to see her start because I wanted to see what she could do against the US. You know, we know what Ellen White can do. And that's not disrespecting Ellen White. That's almost completely the opposite. It's almost respecting her by admitting that, you know, we know what she can do against even the best team in the world because we've seen her score against the US in one or two games in the past few years. So I think for a lot of people, we just wanted to see something a bit different, and we wanted to see Beth get that opportunity against the top team in the world to see what she could do, because we've never seen that before. I don't think anybody was disrespecting Ellen, certainly not what I saw anyway.
Well, this is quite funny, because when I was listening to this interview, I didn't catch it straight after, because I think I was either busy doing my reaction for the USA game or texting Ali at 2 o'clock in the morning about it. However, I kind of listened to it. I was thinking, he's talking about me and Ali here, because we said that Ellen White wasn't up to normal standards on the video, and that's the only backlash I really heard. Well, I said it anyway. Ali, what do you make of this statement from Mr. Neville?
Again, I think Rich is right. He's taken what people were saying about Beth England as a criticism against Ellen White, and it's that old-fashioned thing of pitting two women against each other, and it's not what fans were saying. They were saying that Beth has been so on form for Chelsea, you know, as has Ellen White for Man City. As West Ham fans, we've seen what both of them can do against our beloved team. And it was a case of, we want to see Beth go up against, you know, Kelly O'Hara, Becky Sauber and the USA defenders and see how she can unpick them. But also, I think a lot of people are calling for him to stop with the one up front and have two up front and see what Ellen and Beth could do together, because I think that would be a fantastic combination that he's just not seeing. So I think he's misconstruing what is praise for Beth as disrespect for Ellen.
See, now, with this statement, my take on wanting Bethany England to start was, I said it last week, I believe players that play for England should play on recent form, not on what they've done 3 months ago. And for me, this claim is just, it just sums him up, really. You know, he's finds it quite hard not to swear, because he is a bit of a idiot, to be honest, when he's in front of a mic with some of the things he comes out with. Although I actually think it could be quite damaging to somebody that wants to get involved with women's football. They might go, "Oh, if we can't have a bloody opinion, we're not gonna get invested into this." And I think this, for many people as well, we feel will be the final straw for him. Rich Pyche actually said this to me today, that he's had enough of him now and he wants him out tomorrow, really. So I think it's going to be quite damaging, actually, to him more than anybody else. So let's get on with that USA defeat then. Rich, what did you think about the game against USA?
I was just a bit disappointed, to be honest, more than anything. I kind of went into it, I didn't expect to see Grace Face score Alessia Russo or Sandy McIver, but I really wanted to see, you know, Chloe Kelly for more than 90 seconds anyway. I wanted to see Beth England, I wanted to see Ellie Roebuck, and there was a caveat with Roebuck that she'd obviously picked up an injury before camp and wasn't fully fit for that opening game. But I wrote before the tournament that I thought She Believes was slightly different priority for England this year. I think it was more about the development of some of these players, the youngsters that have come in ahead of probably the Euros next year. But, you know, we went with a pretty experienced team apart from Lauren Hemp. It was kind of the same team that really started the semi-final. And compared to that performance, you know, I didn't think we were great in the semi-final, but we competed, you know, we scored, we had chances. We missed the penalty, we had a goal disallowed, and on last week we were just nowhere near, absolutely nowhere near. And it just was a continued performance from last year, really. And we can't keep saying there's a hangover from the World Cup or keep saying they're friendly games, because we keep hearing from Phil Neville and from England that these are not friendly games, that they want to win. She Believes that, you know, they take it seriously. So I'm not really sure how to explain how bad that performance was. Was it just the US were so much better? Was it just the fact that we are looking ahead and maybe priorities are elsewhere? I don't know, but we were just nowhere near. We didn't lay a glove on them. And I think the criticism that you said about Ellen was probably justified in that she didn't have a great game, but she didn't get any service. You know, we never got the ball into Ellen White. I can't even remember her touching the ball in the opposition penalty area, to be honest. So I think a lot of it comes down to the coaching, but, you know, I think a lot of it you have to also put on the players as well. You know, there's some good players in that team that are just not performing at the minute. We're not seeing the best of them, and there's probably umpteen reasons why. But yeah, overall it was disappointing. It was just a really disappointing game because we just didn't compete.
What was disappointing for me, Rich, was I wanted to see a front line of Kelly, Hemp and Bethany England. The reason for that is because we're supposed to be preparing these players for a Euros, as he's mentioned 50 times before the USA match. And Chloe Kelly and Bethany England would have learned so much playing against on Kelly's side against Crystal Dunn, and England would have learned so much from playing against them, the USA centre-back partnership. And how you develop for a tournament is bedding in the young players early and putting them in tough scenarios to make them learn ahead of the Euros. So when they're in that tough match in the Euros, where maybe we're in a quarterfinals with the Netherlands, it's 1-1, then players can now go and make a difference because what they've learned. However, putting them on the bench and bringing them for 2 minutes, I mean, what are they going to learn for 2 minutes? What the atmosphere is like? It was totally ridiculous. I thought in the first half, I thought the performance was acceptable. Telford was really good in goal. She, in the first half, actually papered over the cracks of how bad we were playing because of the highlights of that half was her saves. Ali, what did you think of that USA game?
See, I have no grumbles with our goalkeeper. I thought Telford was actually pretty good. She kept the scoreline a bit more flattering at only 2-0. Once again, our defense was shocking. Stephen Millier not performing to the levels we know that they can perform, and them to contribute to the Carly Lloyd goal, which was the second. I also thought that Stanaway was a bit too tempestuous and may have let her temper get the better of her, which didn't help matters. But as Rich said, Ellen White got no service. You know, she wasn't her best form, but you can't create goals out of absolutely nothing. If your midfielders aren't giving you anything and you're the only lone striker, then what are you supposed to do? It was just, we seem to be going backwards, and I don't quite know what's going to stop it.
See, with Houghton and Bright as well, Ali, in that centre back partnership, from the two performances I've seen, I think they're just comfortable. They know whatever standard they perform in these jubilees, they're probably going to start the next game anyway. And I think against Japan, if Phil wanted to gain that ruthlessness of "I will not be messed about as England manager, if you don't perform for me, I'm going to show you that you cannot perform like that by dropping you." And I would have put Fisker McManus in there just to send a little message that I'm not going to accept such poor standards, especially not against the best team in the world. And they're playing them again, they're not going to learn anything. They're just going to think even more, right, I'm comfortable, I'm going to be starting the next game. However I perform doesn't matter because he's going to pick me. Richard, do you agree with that statement that maybe Hart and Bright are looking a bit too comfortable now?
I'm not sure whether it's about being comfortable or not. I think Ali was right. Neither of them play anywhere near like we know they can do. You know, under Mark Sampson, they were both a very solid partnership. I mean, England played a very different style. Under Mark Sampson, it was very much defend first, and it wasn't about playing out from the back. But, you know, again, Steph is someone we see with Man City is very comfortable playing out from the back. I don't think it suits Millie as much. I don't see her do it a lot at Chelsea. I've never seen her really look comfortable doing it with England. But you know, Steph, for me, Steph gets a lot of criticism, but she plays quite well for Man City. Millie is flawless for Chelsea. You know, Millie's absolutely exceptional for Chelsea, and you look at both of them in an England shirt and they're not the same. I think Phil's been a little bit unlucky in some respects that the defence has changed a lot. We've had injuries throughout his tenure, really, or suspensions, or players missing camps, and we never really had a regular back four. And obviously, this camp, Lucy Bronze is injured as well, which was not ideal. But the organisation wasn't there. You know, the second goal, the two fullbacks are deeper than the centre backs. You know, a big issue throughout his time has been set pieces and conceding from crosses, which, fingers crossed, over the first two games has been a little bit of an improvement. Even though I think Lindsey Horan had a very good chance to score from a corner in the USA game, and Japan really are never going to be too much of a threat from set pieces. So I don't know if they're comfortable. I just think the whole organisational side and the performances are not as good as we see at club level. You know, Leah Williamson doesn't play as well as she does at club level, although it's early days for her, and she was at right back. So it's just very, very difficult. And I think whoever you put in there at the minute, I think it comes down to a structural thing more than anything. I think you can put McManus in there. I think you can put Fisk in there. I think you can put Williamson in there, and we're going to have the same issues. I don't see a defence that's being well coached at the end of the day, and that has to go on the manager in his system. And he says that's non-negotiable. But at the minute, we haven't got it right, and we're not getting it right. And if his style is going to be non-negotiable, it has to be better, and it has to be better soon, because we've got an Olympics in, what, 4 months? 4 months' time now, so it has to improve quickly, or else we're not going to win anything.
I actually have a question for both of you. There's a great quote from Rio Ferdinand who said the reason that England never did well when he was playing is because players would get into the dressing room and it would be like that they didn't like each other because they were coached from their club level to be that's your opponent. So when Rio went in with Gerrard, they never got on because Man United hated Liverpool, etc. Do you think there's still an element of that? Is that why it's not gelling? Because they're so used to the fact that they're opponents rather than teammates.
No, I don't think that's as big an issue in the women's game because I think they are actually all quite good friends. A lot of them, they've all been around the same teams, and I don't think the rivalries just haven't been there in the women's game. In the men's game, the Manchester rivalry or United Liverpool, United City Liverpool, Chelsea Arsenal, whatever, the rivalries are massive. In the women's game, it's not ever been like that. It's getting there in maybe one or two games at the minute, but no, I don't think it's anything to do with the players not liking each other. I think they do all generally get along very well and they do stick up for each other. I think it's more on the pitch factors that are affecting things rather than off the pitch. I might be wrong, but maybe there aren't. I'm sure there's tensions at times, but I don't sense it, when I'm around St. George's Park or I'm around the team, I don't sense that there's a bad atmosphere there.
I tend to agree with Rich and Ali there. I think the biggest rivalry for me now in women's football is actually probably USA England because both players, when they're out on the pitch, don't seem to like each other really much. And I actually think this also depends a lot on the manager because if a manager goes in there and goes, I'm not going to have this negativity in my camp. If you come here with a negative attitude, you're not going to be in the next one. If he sets that standard, the players then concentrate on England duties. If he just lets it go on, then it's just going to be a mess. So it depends on the manager. However, I agree with Rich. I think the USA rivalry for that game would have brought our players together. However, it does make me question as well that statement. Is there a divide between the younger and senior players in the camp right now? And is that why things ain't gelling? However, I think that's going to come with time. So it's important with that quote to remember there's a lot of new players in there and they're just starting to gel and also learning each other's styles and how to play with each other in Neville's style, whatever that may be. However, let's go on to the Japan victory. Now, my interpretation of it was I think the wind papers over the cracks and our performance was actually worse. Ali, what was yours?
It says a lot when the highlight of the game was watching our defence bounce, and as someone pointed out, it looked like characters of Wii Tennis. It wasn't exactly the most thrilling game I've ever seen. I thought that we were sloppy, especially in midfield. We gave the ball away a lot. There were certain times when you thought that Beth England should definitely have scored when she didn't. Stanway, I thought, was a bit selfish going forward and could have passed and could have got an early goal, but instead went for goal herself and it was blocked. And I think we didn't read Japan well. Japan came in with a compact game. They were running us through the middle, they were running us in set pieces, and we just didn't read the game well. And it, to be honest, we didn't deserve the win. It should have probably stayed nil-nil. It was a lucky goal by Ellen White. Could argue she was offside, but I think it's marginal. But to be fair, it wasn't the most memorable game, and I can barely remember it, and that was only a day ago.
Rich, what did you make of the Japan performance?
I think it was better than the US, but it's all relative because we were playing a team that was far worse than the US, and Japan frustrated me almost as much as England did, really, because Japan used to be a fantastic team to watch. They were so good, and now they kind of just pass it around and just don't have that end product. The World Cup when they won it, and even in 2015 when they got to the final. Some of the goals that they scored, and the build up to it were unbelievable. And right now, they just look like a team that they just looked like England. It was two very similar teams playing each other, sort of passing it around, not really doing anything, not creating anything. Didn't look particularly good defensively. I think England were better in terms of creating chances. We probably should have scored two or three in the first half. I think both Lauren Hemp and Beth would have been very, very disappointed not to have scored, and probably chances they would have scored. maybe with slightly less pressure on them, playing at their club, not playing in their first sort of big international game. But, it was a more experimental front three, which was pleasing. It was nice to see Chloe start, it was nice to see Beth start, and it was nice to see Lauren start again. And obviously, apart from that, Jordan Nobbs came back in. I thought she played very well. But it was just lifeless, it was just dull. It was a really boring game to watch. And what worries me is we've played two teams that are in their off-season at the moment. And, all right, the US have played a lot of Olympic qualifiers, but Japan, they've had the odd qualifier, but really, their players are not in season and ours are, and we just looked sluggish. And it intrigues me in a way for what Spain will be like, because obviously this is Spain's first tournament, but they've been fantastic so far, and I think they are more clinical than they used to be. They almost seem to have taken on what Japan were like 4 or 5 years ago, so that's going to be another tough test. But yeah, it wasn't a great performance, but a win's a win at the end of the day, and whether it eases the pressure or not, personally I don't think it does, but Phil seems to think he's not under pressure anyway. So yeah, neither performance has been great, but at least there was some positivity in the fact that we won the game.
One thing that really highlights that Japan game was, for me, when we won the game after, I was still annoyed. Thought we were sluggish on the ball. I just think there's a lack of effort in that game. Ali did make me laugh, though, because when I put Millie as one of the parent matches, I thought Millie actually had an okay game. I thought she was making vital blocks, and that stopped Japan from scoring. Ali tends to disagree. We'll get her opinion on that in a minute. However, I think the difference was that Japan were well set up and we're not. My feelings towards Never Wout is getting stronger and stronger every game. And I just don't see us improving by a massive gulp to go and beat our main rivals in the Euros for me, which is Netherlands, to go and win it. I really don't see it. And I think it is time for change for me. And I think there's no better time to get rid of him than after a poor Shibley's, because there's still a relative amount of time for a new manager to come in and make his or her mark. Anyway, Ali, you kind of laughed there when I said Millie Bright had a good / half decent game. What was your opinion on her against Japan then?
I don't think it's her fault. Like, I get a lot of stick because people think because she's a Chelsea player, I don't like her. It's not that at all. It's just our defence again. As Richard said, is there something not clicking? And it's not really clicked since the last She Believes, which we managed to win. It didn't click through the World Cup, and it's not clicking now. It's like, as the group of girls I was watching it with said, it's like when the pressure gets to Steph, she shuts up. So therefore, they don't know what they're doing. There's no direction because their captain has stopped talking. And it's a bit like the same with Millie. Millie will stop when she's under pressure. So therefore, the two figureheads in your defence aren't talking to each other and they ain't talking to the other defenders. That's when mistakes happen, because there's just no communication within that back line. So that was just my theory, is just the fact that they just didn't seem to communicate with each other.
One thing I'm going to say right now, while I'm mentioning about the manager, the guy I think with all these young players that is the right man for the job, and he's going to absolutely wreck me for saying this as a West Ham fan, I actually think it's Matt Beard. I'd appoint him as England manager, because I think he's the best manager to bring young players through. He's got a record, and I could see him taking us to win a Euros. Rich, do you agree with that? Is there anybody in particular you'd like, if you had the choice, to appoint as the next England boss, if Phil Neville is going to be sacked by the Euros?
There's a lot I'd like. I think, unfortunately, there's also a lot that probably look at it and think they're in better jobs than the England job right now. And it sounds daft to say that, because the England job for many is the pinnacle. But, we saw last time when Mark was sacked that everybody kind of dropped one by one, either signed new contracts or they took other jobs or they just didn't want it. And I think it showed that actually the England job isn't the be all and end all for many people. And I mean, I think the main thing is I don't see Phil being sacked before the Olympics, certainly. I think now, it's 4 months out, he's probably quite far along with the process of selecting his squad, whether that be the England players or obviously the players from Scotland, Wales, or Northern Ireland. So I think it's whatever happens that she believes. I think we're into that process now. I think the only way it would happen is if the Olympics were a complete disaster. I think that would be the only thing that would put real pressure on the FA because, look, the Euros are at home and we are trying to promote the game to the masses in this country that, are quite ignorant towards women's football, quite ignorant towards England. And if we have a bad tournament in front of our home fans, with people watching on TV, it's not going to do anything to change that. And then you have to wait 10, 15, 20 years for another home tournament to have that opportunity again. So I think there'll be a lot of pressure if the Olympics go badly. I think until then, I think he's fine, whatever happens. In terms of who would come after, I don't know because I don't know who would want it. Nobody seemed to want it last time. I think Matt's a very good manager. I'd be interested to see how he did with England because I think actually his success over the years, with Liverpool particularly, and you see it now with West Ham, what he tries to do, there's actually quite a large foreign core about his squads, and he's always had a real eye for signing talent and talent that you probably haven't usually heard of. The Liverpool squad that he built was full of players that came in really from nowhere that people didn't know about, and they won back-to-back titles. And he's kind of done the same with West Ham a little bit. When Jane Ross left, you sort of looked at it and thought, right, who's going to score the goals? And he brought in Martha Thomas, who I don't think anybody had heard of. And she's turned into a really good signing. So how he would do with a completely British, sorry, English core and how he would do without being able to do that recruitment, I don't know. I think he's a very good coach, so it'd be interesting to see how he would adapt to it. But I think for now, it's just all hypothetical, isn't it? Because I certainly don't see a change being made until the Olympics, and then it will depend on what happens in Tokyo. And even if it goes badly, I still don't. I'm not entirely convinced the FA would make a change, even if the Olympics went badly.
Another thing I don't understand with this him as a team GB manager, I don't understand how oh God, her name just gone out of my head. The Scotland manager, how she
Billy
didn't get.
Kerr.
That's it, Shelley Kerr, how she didn't get the role, because I thought she would have deserved it much more. Ali, I know you'd like him to start West Ham, but I do as well, but first of all, do you agree that would be good for the England job? Well,
What?
for where England are now, and who would you like if it's not?
I think not Matt, and it's not a selfish reason. I think Rich is right. He's very good at building from unknown talent, and I don't know how well he would do under not only having specific players that people would expect to be picked, but also the fact that you've seen him on the touchline, Reece. I don't know how you deal with FA scrutiny like that when you pick on the touchline. To be honest, the person I wanted has just signed a new deal with the United States, and that was Laura Harvey used to be at the Utah Royals. She is now just signed as the unders coach, but she's a cracking coach and has managed to get a lot out of people, both with Utah, which was a brand new team, as well as she was also Arsenal. She's been all over, and I think she would be the best to bring out the England squad, but she has just signed a contract with the unders. We shall see maybe after the Olympics.
The reason I said Matt was because I think we've got a lot of young players and he does like to bring and is good at bringing them through. Whether if I was to pick one manager, probably be either Emma Hayes or Joe Montemiro, one of them two.
So they'd be my probably joint top picks, because I like both of them as managers. However, let's get on to the big match on Wednesday. It's England v Spain, which should be a cricket score like win for Spain, in my opinion. Rich, how do you see us getting on against the... Well, Spain do deserve a lot of credit, because they've been great this tournament.
They do, yeah. They were superb against Japan, and what impressed me was they've sort of started to add the clinical touch now, which was never there. And I remember when we played them last year in a friendly before the World Cup, they were very good, but they just could not finish their chances. And against Japan, you know, Japan again were not great, and obviously they didn't finish their chances against the US, but I certainly think they will cause England problems. And a lot of it will depend on the lineups again. You know, it's the third game now in the space of a week, so I don't know what Spain will do. I don't know what England will do. You know, we haven't seen Grace Fisk yet. We haven't seen Sandy McIver. We haven't seen Alessia Russo. So will he go with an experienced team to start and bring those on? Will he put them in from the start? I've no idea. You know, obviously, if he does throw them in, there's the caveat that if Spain win, you know, we did go with an inexperienced team to get them some experience, but you know, you run that risk that it could get, you know, very, very difficult, depending on the lineup, you know, because Spain are a great team, you know, they play some fantastic football. So it will be difficult, you know, it'll be a very difficult test. And you come out, as she believes, with off the back of a defeat, and that lingers, you know, that lingers until the next game. You come out of it with a win, which would obviously make it two wins in a row, and certainly it would ease the pressure. So I think he'll go strong. I think he has to go strong, because I think if he comes out of it with another defeat, it will just keep people asking questions next week, the week after, and until the next game. So I'll be very interested to see how it goes. But I do think it will be a much tougher test than Japan was.
Ali, would you make it to the test of big in the... what's been a great Spain side this tournament?
I hope that the England squad have been watching the Spain games, because I hope they don't underestimate them. That's my biggest fear, is that they're going to go in and think that it's like the team that they played before the World Cup, and this is a different Spain. This is a different team. They are pulling the trigger on their chances more than they were. They've got some great players that can cause our team a lot of problems. They're quite good at set pieces, which we are not very good at defending. So he has to go in strong. I'd like to see him put two up front instead of one up front and see how Beth and Ellen work together. I think that's what the fans have been crying out for. I think the players have been asking for it, so that would be good. And strong defence, we could do it, but it's going to be very close.
This game against Spain does tip the balance for Phil going into the Olympics, because if he wins this game, I think people will start to give them a bit more time again. Although I'm worried about the Spain game, because they are, I think right now they are better equipped for the Euros than we are. Like Rich said, they've added that finish and touch. And one thing I noticed against USA is they're really well set up defensively. And they work hard for, every player works hard for each other. They've got a team spirit. And that's something I don't think we have right now. So if it comes down to that, Spain will win. however, I think with this, we've got to... Well, Phil, for his own benefit, really, has to go strong, field a strong team. Hopefully, we get the win. And that will set him in good stead for the Olympics and further England matches. However, the main thing I'm looking out for in this performance, even more so than the result, is something I haven't seen yet, and it's a performance for England. If I see all them players work hard, give them a performance, and we play well with a style, and that's clear to see, I'll be happy no matter the result. However, what's winding me up right now is I'm not seeing that. And I don't expect it either. So I did this last week, Tully. I'm going to do it again. Abby, your team for the Spain game.
I wish you would give me more notice than this.
No, I like a instant reaction.
I would keep Roebuck in goal. She made some pivotal saves against Japan. I would, controversially, I'd drop the captain. I don't think Steph's been having a great game. I would give Nobbs the armband. So my back line would be probably, and this is not in order of position, it's just my back line would be probably McManus, Fisk, Greenwood, and Stokes. I'd put Scott back in midfield, so it'd be Nobbs, Scott, and Kira. Maths. So that's eight. And then I would have White and England.
Okay, before Rich uses them, I'll give mine. I'm going for a 4-4. So, Roebuck in goal, Greenwood, Houghton, Fisk, Williamson at right back, Jordan Nobbs and Jill Scott in a defensive midfield role. I'll put Nobbs there because I think we need creativity. That's reasonable fast against Spain and Canada. Kind of sorry, Kate is probably going to kill me after this. I'll have to clear her out. Lauren Hemp, Paris, and England and White up top, because I want to see what them two can do. Rich, your team for the Spain game.
Do you want my team, or do you think want what I think Phil will do?
I want your team.
They'd probably vary quite a lot.
Give both them, Rich, go on.
I mean, I would like to see McIver start in goal, just because we've got three goalkeepers, and obviously Carly and Ellie have both had a game and both did very well. I don't think he will. I think he might go with Carly again, just to put her back in and maybe bring Sandy on for the second half. I don't know. I think she will play a part. I don't see a point in taking a player, you know, when you're saying you're going to give them experience and not playing them at some point. So if we don't see McIver, we don't see Fisk, and we don't see Russo at some point, whether it's from the start or otherwise, I'd be quite disappointed. Defensively, it's tough. He could put Leah back to right back. He could play Abby, but then you're probably looking at Steph and Millie again, and it's a lot to ask those two to play a third game together. I think he might put Leah back in at right back and put Abby in alongside Steph or Millie, and then bring Grace on at some point. Probably what I'd do, maybe I would put Abby at right back and put Leah in the centre. I think Alex will probably come back in at left back over Demi. I probably agree with the midfield three that Ali said. I think we need to see Kira, Jordan and Jill together. I don't think George has had the greatest tournament. I think Jordan was very, very good against Japan. I think Jill is actually very important to the way this team plays. I think she's one player that under Phil consistently, she's been a good performer. Look, Stanley Forth could come in for Walsh, who knows, but you know, I think Kira again has been one of the steadier performers, and against a team like Spain that, you know, are not going to be physically too strong, you know, they're going to play the same way as us. You know, Kira is a fantastic passer of the ball, so I think she will probably stay in. And again, in attack, you know, like you guys have said, I'd love to see Beth and Ellen start together, but if he sticks with his 4-3-3, I'm not sure how it works. You know, I don't want to see Beth pushed out wide. So Lauren Hemp, I don't know whether she would start a third game in a row, so I could probably see maybe Nikita coming back in. I think it'll be a toss-up between Beth and Ellen. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ellen go back in there after a goal. And as much as I'd like to see Russo start, I think he might give a start to Tony Duggan. Again, just in terms of getting her some minutes. So I think he'll go quite experienced, and I then just hope that we don't get a player off the bench for 90 seconds like we do with Chloe. I want to see Russo and Fisk and McIver get, you know, at least 20, 30 minutes, whatever the situation of the game is, because that's what they're there for. You know, he's taking them for that experience. So if we don't see them, I think that would be the most disappointing element of the game for me.
As you said, that 90-second thing, Rich, I can just picture it in my head. Grace is on for her England debut. Neville looks at her, oh, 30 seconds left, perfect. Come on. however, this leads me on to my next question, and it's one that's quite an interesting question, actually. We'll start with Ali with this one. That statement yesterday that was already mentioned, Ali, from Phil, do you think that shows the pressure is starting to mount on him now that he's making these sort of statements?
About the Ellen statement?
Yeah.
I think he's aware of the pressure, but then at the same time, I don't think there is any pressure on him. Because we can rant and rave as much as we want. We can talk about, like, he needs to get results and the honeymoon period's over and everything else. But he's got the FA backing. They backed him after the World Cup. So I think he will want to prove his critics wrong, but there's no pressure on him to do so. So he can keep saying what he wants, but he's golden until he's not.
Well, I'm prepared to get my another lap banner again if it takes that. Rich, do you think that statement about Ellen shows the pressure slightly mounting onto
I'm not sure if that quote specifically does. It's interesting he keeps saying that he doesn't feel it, but you know, at the end of last year, I think it was after the Portugal game, he claimed one of my colleagues was trying to get him the sack with something that she'd written, and she certainly wasn't. I don't know what he'd read. I mean, apparently he reads a lot of our work and he reads a lot of our tweets. So he's obviously keeping tabs of what we think and what we think of his performances and his team. But he had a bit of an outburst at the end of last year when things were not going well, that people wanted him out of the job. And it wasn't really what people had said. I don't think it's our job in the media to want a manager sacked. I think we can critique performances, but I don't think we have to go out there and say this person should be sacked or this person should do this. So I did at the end of last year, I did feel like he was feeling it a little bit. I don't know whether he was surprised at the scrutiny that he was getting, or did he think he was going to come into the women's game and it was going to be easy and there wasn't going to be any criticism and that people weren't going to be bothered if whether he did a good job or not. I don't know. I don't think his Ellen quote was that. I haven't heard anything from him this week that sounds to me like he feels like a man under pressure. I don't know if he's had reassurances over the winter that his job is safe for at least the next 18 months. Whatever happens, we don't know the details of that kind of thing. So I think he should be under more pressure. I think if this was Gareth Southgate or it was a Premier League manager, you know, there would be a lot of scrutiny and a lot of pressure. But right now, it just doesn't feel like that, whether that's right or wrong. I don't know, but I don't think he's talking at the moment like a man under pressure. So I don't know if something's changed over the winter, but for now, it seems okay. But obviously, if we lose to Spain, let's see what he says after that game.
Seeing, I don't think this statement for me provides that he's under pressure. However, I'm a strong believer. If someone keeps on repeating a statement, they actually believe if someone repeats that they're not consistently or doing something, I believe sometimes it means that they are. And I think he is feeling the pressure now. He doesn't seem as confident going into face interviews now, I don't think. It's just questions why he has to repeat the fact that he's not under pressure all the time. And he's picking up on little things now. So it's going to be interesting. However, what I think this statement kind of proves is the next step for me for our game is to start to accept criticism, because I think in some instances I've seen over the past few weeks, criticism has just not gone down too well. So I think that's the next step for us. However,
Rich,
this isn't...
Can I pick up something you said? Because it's something that I've been thinking about. You said that if he was Gareth Southgate or a Premier League manager, he would be under more scrutiny. Do you think there's an element of it's just women's football, why he's been allowed to continue? Because if a manager of a men's team had taken a second ranked team and dropped them down to sixth, would they be gone now?
Yes,
I think it's the nature of our sport still on the women's side is that from a media point, I think the media the media in the men's game has a huge influence on man because it's written about every single day. You pick up the back page of a newspaper, or you go on Sky Sports, or you go on the BBC, you go on anything, you know, social media, there will be pressure on Mourinho, there'll be pressure on Guardiola, there'll be pressure on Solskjaer, there'll be pressure on somebody, because it's a worldwide sport, it's the most popular sport in the world, and it's just talked about every minute of every day, and there's so many talking about it that the pressure just builds up. With women's football, there's probably not even 10 of us that kind of cover it regularly, and whilst we put pressure on with what we say and what we think, it's not a lot compared to the men's game. You know, the scrutiny just can't be as high, so I think it's harder to build that amount of pressure up on a manager, whatever you write. You know, we've been pretty negative in general about England's performances and about Phil as a coach in recent months, but, you know, without the kind of the whole world behind us, I don't think it's going to change anything. So I just think generally there isn't as much pressure in the women's game because there isn't as much scrutiny, and I think those two things go hand in hand, and that might not change for another 5, 10, 20 years, who knows, because women's football just isn't as big media-wise as the men's game at the moment.
You know, one thing as well, which I think plays a massive influence in the men's game, and it isn't, it's there, but it's not as much there in the women's game. So I think fan channels as well. I think there was a certain fan channel, I won't mention them, they put a lot of pressure on the on their manager, and he got sacked, and obviously Arteta came in, and I think that had a lot to do with that sacking, because as soon as they started to play a part, the pressure from other media sources started to go on Emery. I don't know if you think that also plays a factor.
Yeah, I actually had a conversation similar to this with some colleagues today, actually, and I said, if there was anything that I think was going to put pressure on the FA, it is the fan reaction, because really, the fan reaction against Mark Sampson was very negative at the end, obviously, with what went on, but with the performances and the results, it was never really that bad. Like, the football was quite dull, it was very defensive, but England were getting results, and obviously they got that bronze medal, and that got Mark a lot of credit, whereas Phil hasn't had that kind of big result yet. And I think, you know, I looked at the Lionesses Twitter account after the USA game, and the responses, and it was just all negative. It was people saying that, you know, you need to sack Phil, you need to change the manager, or the football's rubbish, or this is rubbish. And I just look at what's coming up in 18 months, and I look at, I don't think Phil Neville being the manager will stop the England game selling out, but I can't help but feel, you know, the Football Association is so desperate to market women's football to the fans, to young fans. And, you know, young fans are generally the ones on social media. They're the ones leaving those kinds of comments. And I can't help but feel there might be people at the FA looking at it and thinking, wow, you know, the fans are so against. I mean, look, social media is a very small proportion of people in the world, and possibly a small proportion of people who go to games, but I haven't really seen anybody who's actually seems to be on Phil Neville's side. You know, it almost seems to be unanimous that nobody really thinks he's the right person, and people want a change. And I think, is that what's going to put pressure on the FA long term? If the fans continue to be fed up, if they continue to criticise, if some continue not to turn up because they don't like who the manager is, I think that almost puts more pressure on than the results, you know, for an FA that is really trying to grow the game, and grow the game with a fan base that should be expanding game after game. So I think you're right. I think fan channels, I don't think you're going to get too many of them still in the women's game. I think they're popping up here and there. I think you get more fan groups and maybe blogs rather than actual fan channels. But yeah, I do think if there was anything that would have an influence, it might be the constant negativity from the fans, actually, rather than the media.
You know, the reason, before I get out of the table, like, the reason why I asked is because this is just an example. So, me and Ali's, this podcast had, what, 100,000 subscribers or regular listeners, and we got the six biggest influential writers, and we all came on and went, we're not covering the games anymore. Phil Neville's, well, me and Ali already do Phil Neville's crap, this and that, and we really made a mark about it. I think the FA would look at it and go, look, it's just gonna, this is causing too much trouble, you're not getting the results, at the door, bye. Ali, do you think fan channels will, when they come into the women's game or and get a large viewing number, will force managers into the sack if they pipe up? And do you think in the men's game fan channels have that sort of influence? Because even on the West Ham side, Ali, the pressure went on Pellegrini when our fan channels and sources started to put pressure on him himself.
I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think so. I think the biggest thing is going to be the dollar, the money. If fans stop turning out for games and they make the Euros not a success by not turning out, that's when people will listen. When people stop going to England games and they don't sell out stadiums and they're not shown to be growing, that's when people will listen. It's all about money. And you say about West Ham, there's been how many protests about our board, and are they going anywhere? No, because you still get people paying their money to go see the games. If we stopped paying, like buying, you know, going to these tournaments and things like that, then I think people will be listening. We have to pay with the pounds if we want to say that. I don't think fan channels will actually have that bigger influence by just saying you don't like the manager, because as Rich says, social media is such a little microcosm of people.
You know, one thing that I will say about after it with West Ham fan channels that I like, Ali, with the men's game, is the guys that do it, they don't deliberately come in early with these statements and force other people into that opinion to get views. They always seem to have that view when everybody else does, and then they start to view it, which I like about our fan channels. Anyway, that was actually quite an interesting debate. However, this will be our final question for tonight. My Ali's answer will be quite clear to your head straight away. If we lose to Spain, which would for me result in a poor sheep leaves, would you sack him? We'll start with Rich.
I don't think he will be. I just think, like I said, the process of the Olympics is too far on now, you know, with players not just from England, but obviously with Scotland, with Wales, with Northern Ireland. I think the long list of 50 players or something had to be with FIFA, I don't know, at the start of the year or the end of last year or something. So I think once a manager has started that process, it's probably too late to make the change. I don't think a manager realistically would ever get sacked off the back of a friendly tournament anyway, where there is a certain amount of experimentation going on. I think the earliest opportunity to make a change will be off the Olympics. You know, if Team GB, because it probably is going to be predominantly an English team, I think there will certainly be some Scottish and Welsh players in there, but you know, you will have, I think the goalkeepers will be English, you'll obviously have your Stephs, your Millies, your Lucys, you know, you can't imagine, you know, those players and Jordan and Jill and Kira and Beth and Ellen, etc., not being there. So, you know, it will predominantly be an English team, and he'll be judged on those results. And if it goes badly, and, you know, let's say we didn't get out of the group, or we scraped out of the group and went out in the next round, and things hadn't got better from where they are now, then I think there would have to be very serious questions asked of his future. If things pick up and we have a great Olympics and we come out of it with a medal, then, you know, he's earned every right to carry on the European Championship. So I think we have to probably just reevaluate in August and see where we are then.
Ali, if we lose to, if he loses Spain, would you sack him?
Do I want him gone? Yes. Do I think he'll go? No. I think Rich is right. We are too far in the process for the Olympics now to really move him on. It will have to be after the Olympics, where we've still got some time for the Euros. But I think it should mark his card. If we don't do well in the She Believes, this should be a red flag to the FA that maybe goes to him and say, right, pull your socks up. Otherwise, you will be out after the next tournament if we don't start seeing results. You got to remember, we've only won these last two matches out of, was it 11? That yeah. we've had no result for. So if we don't beat Spain and we crash out of the She Believes, I think it should be a big red flag.
I would have sacked him after the USA game, actually. And I would have also sacked him after yesterday as well. So that's my opinion sorted on that. I agree with both of you. I don't think he will be. However, the one thing I will say is if we had a poor Olympics and they sacked him, that would make a really big statement on how seriously the FA, to other people outside that don't follow us, what they're taking this Euros. Because a lot of people would look into it now and go, well, if the FA ain't taking it seriously and they're letting him carry on, why should we take it seriously from an outside perspective? So I think the best time to sack him would probably be after the Olympics. I don't think they will. I think he's going to be there, our manager for Euro 2021. And if he has a really, really poor Euros, then I think he'll be out the door. However, that is the end of tonight's show.
I have one more question. As we have Rich, because we've talked about the Euros a lot, and one of the biggest controversies over the Euros is how southern centric the grounds that have
good
been
question
put, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts were, since you know you're a Sheffield lad.
I think it's a shame there isn't a bit more balance. I'm not privy to what the selection criteria was. I believe it wasn't clubs specifically that had to bid. I believe it was local councils and sport councils and UK Sport were in charge of all that rather than the FA. So we don't know obviously whether Birmingham Council put a ground forward, whether St Andrews or Villa Park or whoever, or whether the North East did, if they did or not. What the selection criteria was after that. I think you look at the groups and how they've put things together. Obviously, they've done it in a way that teams are kind of not travelling too much. Obviously, England's group games, apart from obviously the first game at Old Trafford, are all Brighton and Southampton, which are obviously very close together. You've got, you know, Sheffield and Rotherham very close together. You've got the two Manchester stadiums very close together. So I don't know whether that was an influence, you know, if maybe there was only one ground in the northeast put forward. Did they look at it and think, well, that's too far away from anywhere else to make it doable? Or did these councils just not bid? You know, did they not see it financially viable? I've no idea. You know, I mentioned last week on Twitter that I wish there was a bit more clarity with this kind of thing, because I think it would stop a lot of the questions. You know, I think we had the same situation back in 2016 with the Conti Cup final, and everyone got annoyed because it was at Man City's ground, and obviously there was always a good chance Man City were going to make that final. But you know, I found out not too long after there was actually only one other team that bid to host that final because it wasn't financially viable, and if the FA had come out and said it, you know, I think the CFA of the two, I'm not going to say who the other one was because the club asked at the time that I didn't, but the CFA was the better option out of the two. And if the FA had come out and been open about that process, I think people would have understood it more. And it's the same with the Euros, you know. Just tell us, you know, did these councils bid? Were the North East interested? Were the Midlands interested? And if not, there's no blame on the FA. And if they were, at least we can, you know, see the reasons. So it's a shame, and obviously people will miss out, but you know, at least the one good thing about this country is it's not the biggest country in the world, so you can get anywhere in a few hours. You know, I travelled around France last year at the World Cup, and it was a nightmare, to be honest, England having to go from the south coast to the north coast to the south coast again. So I think actually grouping the games together is probably quite a sensible thing, because some of the schedules in France were absolutely ridiculous, to be honest.
Yeah,
I did it myself. It was crazy. I am quite grateful that we are quite small.
The only thing I'm a bit disappointed about, really, with the stadiums, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's really, apart from Wembley, a really big stadium selected in the capital. I would have liked maybe an Emirates, a London stadium or something like that, where most of the attention would be probably provided from the capital, and it probably would sell out like it will do, in my opinion, with Old Trafford. And it's also a big opportunity to market that tournament from an early stage. Like, I think Lee Sports Village, they've already got the banners up for Euro 2021, which is great for them. How was that? Ali, do you have any more questions before we end the show?
I'm done. I just thought I'd take the opportunity as Rich was here.
It was a fantastic question, actually, Ali, to be fair. So, just before I wrap up the show, I've got some shout-outs to give out. A massive thank you to Pete Bradbury, who edits the show every week. I haven't managed to give him a shout-out yet. Massive thank you to Pete. He edits it really well, and he's a really important force behind the We Are the Girls in Clareton Blue, FAWSL, and Tree Bullies podcasts. A thank you to Emma, who we had on, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, who is carrying on to shout out our show and boosting us with listeners. A thank you to FAWSL full-time and Dan, who's putting out articles every week now, which are important to our development. A massive thank you to Best Foot Forward, who actually claimed we are their favourite podcast, Ali, which is nice to hear. And if anybody hasn't heard the news, we banged on about it all day Friday. American Hammers have renewed our West Ham show, and this podcast will be available on their radio station. So thank you to them. And a massive thank you to Rich for coming on tonight.
No problem.
Also, a thank you to our one and only Patreon, which happens to be my mother. So thank you very much, Suzanne Coker, for giving us money.
Yeah, and that reminds me, if you haven't subscribed to us yet, I think there'll be a tweet out later in the week on Patreon. Every bit of money will be provided into paying our editor and our RSS podcast subscription. And actually, thank you to anybody in the week that goes and subscribes to that. Arthur, Ali, you got any final statements?
No, I'm done.
And of course, follow us on Twitter at Girls in Claret and Blue. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with our final She Believes podcast, where hopefully we'll be speaking about a Spain win and the FA Cup fixtures. So thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks, Rich and Ali, for joining me tonight.